Yeah.
Yes.
So let's start recording the courage.
Excuse me.
Yeah, session number 6 is courage. And it's interesting how it sort of got lined up, because which center do you cover each week? But I think it's beautifully flowing into one builds up on the top of the other.
Yeah.
And courage, it has a physical impact on liver, blood, lymphatic system, spleen, B cells, kidney, prostate, pancreas, solar plex, neuron network, nervous system, lungs, testes, and ovaries. Emotional symptom, fear, action paralysis, confusion, bravado. My fears keep me from doing what I want to be doing. And spiritual symptoms, not trusting God, not having faith. Assessment statements, we have, I'm courageous. I trust that I'm protected. I take leaps of faith, and I move through challenge gracefully. So, Linda, I'm wondering if fear plays a role in your momentum in life.
Oh, it is that. I thought I heard a question at the end of that. yes, fear plays a very large part in my life, a larger part than it should, and a little less large than it has over the past 50 years, but it still has a hold on me. It doesn't want to let go. It's had a great run over my lifetime, and it really doesn't want to let go.
It doesn't, does it?
Mm-mm.
What has helped you to deal with fear? Like, do you have certain tricks?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm full of tricks, let me tell you. But when it gets overwhelming, I just go inside and I figure that if I ignore something long enough, it will either go away by itself or somebody will fix it. One of those two things will happen. And so that's what I do is, I mean, my body is there and, you know, I go around my day and I, you know, talk to people, but I don't think about it. I don't do anything about it. And sometimes that works and sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes I get bit.
Do you agree? We have the primary EFT set up for this courage, even though fear is keeping me stuck. Mm-hmm. Do you think... stuckness seems to be a big issue, right? It would come up like stuck, you know, stuck, I'm stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at it again, as I told you, I've taken this many, many times, but it's each time you hear something different. So for me, I'm hearing fear is cause of being stuck. I thought that it was not knowing enough, being good enough, but I guess that's fear, not being good enough, not knowing enough. It's all fear.
Yeah.
So is there something that you are, it's in your plan to do, you know? Do you have a vision for yourself, what you want to do?
Well, I am working on that vision. I've had lots of visions, and for much of my life, my vision was to get my kids raised to adulthood without killing them.
And you did that successfully.
I did that successfully, yes.
But with a lot of fear along the way.
Yeah, you know, I raised them to adulthood, and you know, they were a resilient people, and they you know, figured out life on their own, and they actually, you know, contribute to their own little world there, which is something I hadn't thought of, but that's the way it ended up, and I really appreciate that. And then after that, it was going back to school because I didn't know anything else to do, and I'm big on education, and so I went back to school and I got my master's in counseling, and so that spent, you know, that was a good chunk of my life in my 40s. And then I was, you know, back to getting a full-time job again. And that's where I got stuck. Totally stuck.
And okay, so that wasn't a fear then that kept, was it fear that kept you stuck? What was the stuckness about?
Well, the stuckness was about I couldn't get a job. There's no seeming to it. I just could not get a job. I got lots of interviews. I got lots of offers to, you know, interview people would call me up and say, I'd like you to apply for this position. And I'd go through one, two, sometimes three interviews, and it was just, you know, zip, nothing. And I couldn't figure out what the heck was the problem. And so finally, the last time that I knew, I walked away from that third interview knowing that I had this job. You know how you know in yourself you have this job. And I got a rejection letter, and I thought, oh, this is it's ridiculous. So I called him up and asked him what it was that I needed to do more. Did I need more education? Did I need more experience? You know, what was it? And they hemmed and hawed and, you know, went around the block about it, and I wouldn't let it go. And so finally she said, well, we think you're too gentle.
Oh,
and that stopped me. I mean, people had called me a lot of things, but gentle has not usually in that description of me. And I didn't think of myself as gentle. And so, I didn't know what to do. And that's where I gave up. I said, to heck with it. I have to get a job, something. And I've been focusing on this for the past 5 years, you know, not just getting a job, but the whole education piece. And I had interned in one of the toughest jails in the Tri-County area. So I didn't think I was tremendously gentle, and I survived that. So, you know, it just boggled my mind, that description. But I thought, you know, I don't have time to continue this anymore. I can't. I just have to get a job and work at it, because I do have to eat. And so that's what I did. And then when I was 50, I hit the burnout wall, and that was, you know, that was the end of me there. I don't think I thought much beyond, you know, a day and a half ahead of time for the next 10, 15 years. Because I couldn't stop. It would have been nice if I could have just laid in my bed and rested for 2 years. But I couldn't stop. I had all these responsibilities, and I did still have to work, and I didn't know what was going on. You know, was it later after I went back, and I thought, well, you know what happened was you just burned out. I had been, you know, I was raised by generators, so I thought that you got up in the morning and you went to work and you worked your tail off, and you came back home and you worked your tail off there, and you went to bed and you got up and you did it again. And whether you felt like it or not, whether you were sick or not, it didn't matter. And that just, you know, that just killed me almost. And then as I started thinking about getting back into the work world and you know, looking around for positions and just seeing what was out there, and every time I'd get to the resume part, you know, to fill out my resume and to look, and I'd look and I'd go, oh my God, I've got this big gap where I haven't done anything. Of course, that was where I was caregiver for my husband. So I did something, I just wasn't getting paid for it, and so it didn't count. So then that Linda did what Linda does, which is, okay, this is not going to work, so I'm just not going to do it. And I didn't. And that's where the fear came in for me. Every time I'd sit down at the computer and I think, well, let's just see what a resume for me looks like, you know, because they're getting a little more loose now, so just see that. And there were just these great, big, huge gaps in it, and I'd go, oh my God, I can't have that, and I don't want to send something out that won't even get looked at. And of course, how would I know it was going to get looked at? Lord knows. But that in my mind, it was like nobody was going to even look at it if it didn't have, you know, 10 or 15 years of solid employment from somebody else. And then that became, well, I can't do anything anyway, because I never had a career. I had jobs, but I didn't have a career. And so I don't have anything to fall back on. So I'm not worth it. You know, I'm not worth anything. And then that moved over to the money, where, okay, if I'm not worth anything and I'm just getting this small little pittance from Social Security, then how am I going to survive? And then I really went into my cave, because it was like, okay, just somebody come save me, rescue me, you know, whatever. And that's always worked before, but I've been a hermit for so long that, you know, my list of friends has gone down quite a bit. So nobody's coming to rescue me, and I realized I've got to do it myself. And then I get scared again. It's not this huge, humongous scare, except I've noticed at night I'm starting to wake up almost in a panicky mood, and I have to tap. So there's stuff going on there with me that I'm not quite sure what it is about, because I'll usually fall asleep somewhere in the middle of tapping.
And when you tap on yourself.
When I tap on myself, yeah.
Right.
I'll lay in bed and I'll wake up and I'll go, okay, what's going on? And then somewhere in my body it says, we're panicking. And so instead of trying to figure it out, I just go, okay, all right, even though I'm laying here in bed in the middle of the night and I'm panicking all over the place, I still completely love and accept myself. And then somewhere along the line, I'll usually get to at least my nose, and then I'll wake up and it'll be morning. So somewhere in that, I relax enough to go back to sleep. But it's, you know, the panic is fear.
Do you have a little bit longer time today than an hour? I kind of tried to keep it to an hour, but I'm just wondering if you have more time.
Yeah, I think I do today.
Okay.
I don't have anything right after this.
Okay, so with that fear, what are you telling yourself? What's the story, and where did it start? Story.
Well, it's probably been a lifelong thing, but what I tell myself is that I am never going to be able to. I'm never going to be able to give to the world.
Mm.
And since I'm never going to be able to give to the world, why am I still here? It's like, why the heck am I still hanging on here? And it just feels like I'm too stubborn to let go. And I'm bound and determined that I am going to do something, but I don't know what it is. And up until recently, I have not been patient enough to wait it out. And now I'm forcing myself to wait it out. Because, you know, in my 20s, I had lots of time, and I'll be 65 on Wednesday.
Not this Wednesday. Happy birthday. Wow. But it's never too late.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to contribute something positive to this world before I go. And that's my big fear, is that whatever I'm just never going to be able to do, I'm just going to run around in circles for the rest of my time here and never get anything done, never contribute anything to anybody.
Wow. Okay. I'm influenced by others is what you are telling yourself. Would that be correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. I mean, you cannot believe all this experience and stuff you know and do, and mm-hmm. going back to getting masters. Just So if there were no others, okay, well, let's start tapping and we'll see where else will it lead us, and maybe at the end Okay. We'll look at it a little bit closer, just you and I, what's coming up. So even though fear of everything is keeping me stuck.
Fear of everything is keeping me stuck.
And those damn others.
Those damned others.
They keep me stuck.
They keep me stuck.
If it wasn't for others, I'd be just fine.
If it wasn't for others, I'd be just fine, yeah.
Yeah, and I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
And I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
And even though I create this story about others.
I create this story about others.
It keeps me stuck in fear.
It keeps me stuck in fear.
And I tell the story over and over to myself.
And I tell the story over and over to myself.
I like the story.
Oh, it's a great story. I love it.
And it keeps me stuck.
And it keeps me stuck.
All these others are keeping me stuck.
All these others are keeping me stuck.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
And even though fear of others is keeping me stuck.
And even though fear of others is keeping me stuck.
In addition, I have this wonderful story about others.
And added to this other wonderful story that I have about others.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
Okay, eyebrows. I'm scared.
I'm scared.
Side of the eye. Scared of the others.
Scared of the others.
Under the eye. Just plain scared.
Just plain scared.
Under the nose. This scary feeling.
This scary feeling.
Chin. This fearful, scary feeling.
This beautiful, scary feeling.
Collarbone. Stuck in this fear.
Stuck in this fear.
Under the arms. Stuck in the story.
Stuck in the story.
Heart. My beautiful stuck story.
My beautiful stuck story.
Top of the head. All this stuckness.
All this stuckness.
What do you think?
I don't know. There's, I don't feel any, anything moving up, coming up. Nobody's talking to me in there.
That's what I'm sort of noticing. Like, does that feel that it took quite a bit off?
Yeah.
If it's the others.
I wonder if it's, if others, for me, if others aren't the result of my own fear instead of the cause of my own fear, and that my stuckness is self-made. And then when I move past that, when I push past that, which I have at times, move past that stuckness and into something, that's where I then start getting more afraid of others, because then others not only see me, but I'm also more dependent on the others to actually respond to me in some way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. It's a very interesting feeling that I have now, like this nothingness. It's really hard to put a finger on it. So what's going on? Let's see what's going on. Where is that? We can get another clue.
So in there is the realization that I had a couple of years ago, is that I don't want to work for somebody. I've never really wanted to. I've just always not known that I had a, I had another choice. But having no, having found out that I was a manifester and that was my problem, I've decided that I really can't work. My last job was an absolute disaster, and part of it was because I was fighting so hard having to work for somebody else. And I'm just, I've decided, you know, the last part of my life, I don't want to do that. So then that adds another piece of this unknown thing, because I've never done anything on my own. I've never, you know, had a business. I've never done any business stuff on my own. I've always done it for somebody else. So that's an unknown piece. And the unknown and I are very uneasy companions. More me uneasy than them. I mean, the unknown seems to be very happy to come into my life.
Well, it seems like you have all the qualifications to support people in counseling capacity and energy capacity, working on your own, being therapist. Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to do that?
I have. Counseling. I'm also a level 2 pranic healer and a Reiki master. So, you know, I am multi-talented in lots of areas. And it's just, I've always felt like I get started and it chugs along for a bit, and then it's like all the doors and windows slam shut, and it's exactly how I feel. And no matter what I try to do, I cannot get those damn doors open, and I can't get the shutters off of the windows until I let it go. And then they all open, but then everything is different, and I can't seem to pick up. You know, people are gone, man. People, you know, who were, you know, who had been coming and, you know, receiving my services in whatever way, all of a sudden have vanished off the face of the earth. And so it's
so what I'm getting is what's going on is rejection. So where's that rejection? Because that's almost what it feels like. So yeah. Who rejects who? Mm-hmm. Are the others rejecting you? Are you rejecting? Is there a fear of success? Like things are getting good and then something happens?
I always feel as though the other shoe is going to drop. I've never, in my worldview, I've never had the other shoe not drop eventually. And so when things get really good in anything, I get very nervous and start looking around for that other shoe, because I know it's out there and I know it's going to drop. And I would really like to have some kind of an idea of what's going to happen if it does drop, when it does drop. And so I get really antsy about that. And that's it. So, everything, I guess.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, because a lot of what you were saying, of course, I can relate to myself.
Yeah.
So things didn't change for me. There is this very, what I've learned, and you might have learned as well, that when we create out of the mind, mm-hmm. it has this clarity. And I've had that experience in my life where I would win 3 radio contests within 3 days.
And yeah.
We had 3 car accidents within 2 weeks.
Oh, gosh.
Right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Not necessarily, it wasn't that close, but when it's happening, you know, like, wow, this is bizarre. You know, 3 times I fall and I win. And they were pretty substantial size prizes. They were not like $20. They were $1,000, $900. Mm-hmm. And a trip to Dominican Republic. So they were pretty good. But when the car accidents happened, they were in 2 weeks. And I noticed that. So in the polarity, when we create in polarity in the mind, when we have a vision, that's what it tends to do. There's this backlash. Mm-hmm. When we go into the heart and we create from the heart, apparently there's no polarity.
Mm.
And the fear of the backlash kind of goes away if you keep practicing.
Yeah.
So, how does that feel?
That feels right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's tap on that. So, even though I have a fear of the other shoe dropping, and it don't know.
I have a fear of the other shoe dropping at any moment now.
When things go well for me. And I keep forgetting that if I create from my heart. There's no other shoe to drop. And all moves just as it should. And I don't get slammed with the other shoe. And I have a smooth sailing. There are bumps in the road. And that's okay. I can get through those. I deeply and completely love and accept myself. Even though I have a fear of rejection. And in the past, when I worked for myself, there was the other shoe that always dropped on me.
I choose to know now.
When I create from my heart. There is no other shoe to drop. Even though I created a fear of rejection in my mind. I choose to know now. That's just my creation. In this creation, there is the other shoe that can drop any moment now. But I choose to create from the heart. Without a second shoe to drop. Or the other shoe to drop. And I deeply and completely love and accept myself. I love this. So, eyebrows. Shoes. Side of the eye. No shoes. Walking barefoot. Under the nose. No shoes. Chin. Heavy shoes. Collarbone. Shoeless. Under the arms. Some shoes.
No shoes.
Heart. No shoes.
Shoes.
Top of the head. What's up with those shoes?
What's up with the shoes?
It is a level of protection, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very... I recognize it as a way to self-protect and to not be, you know, if you reject yourself first or if you abandon yourself first, then if somebody else does it, it doesn't hurt nearly as bad because you've already done it. So it's a kind of a weird psychological self-protect mechanism.
So are there any other stories of what can go wrong? I'm starting to think about the kids, because even though our kids now are adults and we sort of can breathe now that they survived to adulthood, and I had that fear myself.
Yeah.
What about the grandkids?
Yeah.
Does that fear ever go away?
Probably not. I mean, I've got a great granddaughter and I'm still, you know, looking at everything and going, oh my God, you know. How's she going to survive when I'm not here? Which she's doing very fine by herself anyways. And I was never a very hovering mother. You know, my idea of being a mother was to show you how to live well. Show you how to survive in the world and how to live well. And if I do that and you pick it up and go with it, then I've done my job.
Excuse me.
So I've done that. I feel I've done that very well. I've done that very well. But yeah, it's, you know, I have to remind myself that what I'm seeing is not, it's just the surface. It's not what's really going on underneath. And if what's underneath is much more important than what's on the top. But it's still scary.
So, survival versus thriving. Yeah, to survive.
Yeah. And I don't know whether, you know, appropriate fear, the kind of fear that, you know, when you get into a bad situation and your gut says run, that you just, you don't argue with it, you just go. That kind of fear, I don't think that that ever goes away. I think if it does go away, then you end up getting run over by Mack truck or beat up by somebody or something.
I'm wondering, Linda, have you ever seen the show Lost?
Lost? Oh, yeah.
I was standing in the living room the other day, well, about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And I go, what the heck was the show Lost all about? It was like a piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And so we watched it. My husband bought all 6 seasons and we binged watched.
Oh, gosh.
There is a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah.
It triggered beautiful stuff that I ended up working on. Mm-hmm. So if we are in fear of survival, then we must not be okay with death.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Right. So what's the worst thing that can happen?
I think it's not, for me, it's not being there. I mean, I have worked with dying people, and I helped one dying person, my own child, well, he's grown, but, you know, cross over. So, and that was my first big experience with anybody dying. I mean, I've known people who have died, but I haven't been there. And it was vastly different from what I thought it was going to be. And that kind of alleviated for me some of that terror that I had around dying. But there's still some fear there. Sometimes I'll wake up and I'm have post-nasal drip or something and I'm choking. And the first thought that goes through my mind is I'm dying. You know, and I thought, I'm awake. So I can sit up. If I can sit up and move, I'm not dying. it's not being here. It's not being able to participate in anything. You're done, you're gone. And then nobody really knows for sure until you get there what happens afterwards. And I used to have this horrid irrational fear of, you know, having everything in my life, you know, up on the big screen for all of the angels and anybody to see. And I thought, oh my God, I don't want anybody to know what I've done, much less see it, you know, having a life review there. So I thought, well, I can't, if I don't die, then I don't have to do that. which is completely and totally irrational, I know.
What's coming up? Well, it said, like, again, what I'm telling myself, anxiety, depression. And so what I had, remembering what you were sharing about the story with your husband, mm-hmm. dying makes us go broke.
Yeah.
Not even a fear of your own, even though there's a fear of the review.
Mm-hmm.
The fear of others dying and going broke.
Yep.
Going broke. Because the dying process for others that are hanging on is not sometimes, well, not that easy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's tap on that.
Well, money's always a big issue for me.
So. Right. Is there another, before we get into, is there another instance that you've had, kind of like with your husband and seeing someone going broke over dying or?
Well, I went broke myself, which is why when my husband passed, he left me a little bit of money. And his, you know, his idea was that I would at least have a cushion for, you know, for the rest of my life. And because he didn't have any long-term care insurance, most of that went for his long-term care. And that was several, you know, that was $5,000-$6,000 a month. And then I had slipped on the back deck one day and smashed my leg. So I ended up in the hospital and they had to do an operation to get my leg fixed. And I came out of the hospital and I didn't have insurance. And I came out of the hospital with $40,000 in debt just for me. And so between the two medical things, and then because I couldn't take care of him because my leg was broken and I was flat on my back in bed for several weeks, we had to have someone come in and take care of the both of us. So that was an extra one, extra, you know, extra money piled on top of that. And then all the other stuff, the ambulance fees and everything else with that, it ended up taking almost everything that he had set aside for me. And so within, you know, a couple of years, I was where I am now. And actually 3 years, I managed to eke that money out for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, people dying causes you to go broke.
Okay, even though people dying causes you to go broke.
Even though people dying causes you to go broke.
And God forbid something happens to you while they are dying, then you go really, really broke.
Yep. God forbid something happens to you while they're dying because you can go really, really broke.
And it's hard to recover from that.
And it's hard to recover from that.
And I feel the fear.
And I feel the fear.
Where do you feel the fear?
Where? Heart and solar plexus. Shoulders.
Shoulders, and I feel it in my shoulders. Yeah. And the solar plexus.
I feel it in my shoulders and my solar plexus.
Because I feel the burden it puts on me.
I feel the burden that was put upon me.
And it sometimes the burden is shared by others.
Sometimes it's a burden that's shared by others.
It's burden.
This wasn't.
It's burden all over.
It's a burden all over my whole body.
Whole body feels the burden.
Whole body feels the burden.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
Even though fear of dying.
Even though fear of dying.
And the dying process.
The dying process.
Because it can make you go broke.
Can make you go broke.
It's expensive to die and to get sick.
It's expensive to die and to get sick.
I have this fear in my body when I just think about it.
And I get this feeling in my body when I just think about it.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
Even though fear of dying is keeping me stuck.
Even though fear of dying is keeping me stuck.
And I feel it in my body.
And I feel it in my body.
I can breathe now.
I can breathe now.
I can breathe into that fear.
I can breathe into that fear.
And I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
And I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
Eyebrows. Fear of dying.
Fear of dying.
Under the side of the eyes. Fear of going broke.
Fear of going broke.
Under the eyes. This fear of going broke.
This fear of going broke.
Under the nose. Feeling it in the whole body.
Feeling it in my whole body.
Chin. I feel it in my shoulders.
I feel it in my shoulders.
Collarbone. I feel it in my solar plexus.
I feel it in my solar plexus.
Side of the ribcage. This fear.
This fear.
Heart. Fear of dying.
Fear of dying.
Top of the head. It's keeping me stuck.
It's keeping me stuck.
Are you okay there? Seems like you're slightly interrupted there.
Yeah, I had about halfway through, I remembered when my father my father vanished. My mother ended up totally broke. I mean, completely. I mean, just, she had my sister ended up staying with her and taking her in, and that's the only way that she managed to survive. And then when my son died, his wife went broke because he didn't have, of course, he was 40 and he wasn't expecting to die anytime soon. So he didn't have insurance, and he didn't have any real money saved up. And so she was the one who had to take care of all of the expenses of him, his treatments and then afterwards the funeral and everything on that. So yeah, it's, dying and sickness, big sickness, big problems where you end up in the hospital for a week and end up having to have an operation of some kind, or you end up with cancer or something where you've got big medical bills. Those things really do make you broke. There's a pattern, is what I'm saying, is there's a pattern in my life.
How long did your son die ago? How long ago did your son die? I thought that you recovered. 4 years ago.
My son, my husband recovered the first time, and then he died the next year after my son did. So my son was sick, 2010. My son was sick and finally let us know. And then July of 2011, he died. And then July of 2012, my husband died. So
we are doing this at the really good time, because July obviously is a very...
Yeah, it's just been a week.
Yeah.
It's because they died. They died a year and a day apart.
A year and a day apart. Wow. I'm so sorry to hear that. It really reminds me that 2010, now, my theory that I have observed is that something happened in 2010.
Yeah.
And I talked to actually my neighbor who is a nurse, and that's my phone, sorry. That financial crisis of 2008, if you're looking at it from a mental health point of view, which I'm a mental health coach and studied the phases, how the two phase processes and what makes us to recover, it seemed like that really triggered something, and people were so afraid of losing money, not being able to make it, right? And then 2010, somehow 2011 were the years where then they went into regeneration, but they couldn't make it through sometimes. Like some people do. I haven't really talked to many who didn't, obviously, but not making it through that health crisis. And the 2010 being the year, and I just cannot help to always think of Odyssey 2001 and Odyssey 2010. It's like, what did they know and when did they know it? All these weird coincidences. So he couldn't recover from the sickness.
No, he, by the time he admitted that he had anything wrong with him and went to the doctor, he was so far gone, and they did lots of treatment. He had cancer. He had chronic lymphocytic leukemia. And there's two types, and there's one part that you can live for 15 or 20 years and, you know, you take care of yourself and you live a pretty normal life. And there's the other that just ravages your body. And he had that one. And he managed to get through from September in 2010 through to June. he was still living on the East Coast at that time. And then he figured if he came back to Portland, he came home, that he would get well. So then he came back home. And by the time he got here, I mean, his white blood cell counts were like below 10. And so they had been trying to get him in a program with some experimental drug that they were working on for that. But he didn't have enough physical strength to do that. And so he was here 6 weeks and then 7 weeks, and then he died. So,
where are we going to go with that? That reminds me of my letting go and watching. And in this case, it's actually not about a person. It's my cat. First time when we had a cat and it got sick, it had a stomach cancer. Mm-hmm. We were just in so much fear because we didn't know what we were going to do.
Yeah,
and we went with the operation, and she was operated on, and then 3 weeks later she passed on, and of course it cost thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And that being in that blindness, like not knowing what's the right thing for them to do, because if there is a chance, you want to try it. And the second time around, having this awareness that, you know, when I eventually, he also ended up in with stomach cancer, but it was slow growing. And when we had the crisis in the fall, having, I guess at one point it looked pretty bad. And I said, we have to make a decision. We have to make the decision. Unless we make the decision, that energy of not making a decision, really eating everything up. So, you know, let's decide we're going to put him down.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of older and it doesn't look good, and we are not going to put him through medical things. And it wasn't until we surrender to that. I've tried whatever I could, and then time came, okay, you know, so let's stop this. And we made a decision to put him down. And then my husband left for work. This was Thursday. Excuse me. Obviously, I'm clearing something here.
Yeah.
I then went to talk to him. I just thought, okay, well, let me have a talk with him, with his soul. And ended up having psychic surgery is the best that I could ever explain it as. And that afterwards, I was asking him, I could see him running in the field with my first cat. And he was sort of running after her. And I said, wait, Clyde, are you going to, what does this mean? Are you staying or are you going? And the message that I got back was, well, you have to wait and see. He started recovering 5 minutes right after I did that. And the next day he was fine, and we had really good 5-6 months with him till he just left us, and it was within 24 hours and it went so fast, and it was just really beautiful, and I stayed with him. So this fear of not knowing, you know, what the sickness is and how we can what we can do about it and what we cannot. Like, at what point do we surrender to their higher plan, right? We don't really know what their plan is.
Yeah.
And our plan and their plan might be different, right?
Yeah, totally different there.
Okay. So, what do you feel right now? What should we tap on? Is it the anxiety of people dying, the money, the fear of not living, fear of dying and not living for the fear of dying?
Well, that's what's happening a lot. It's not what I'm purposely doing. That's what's happening a lot, is that not living because of the fear. You know, if I don't do anything, you know, from my childhood, if I don't do anything and I just ignore it, it will go either resolve or go away. And in any case, I won't be affected by it. This is total magical thinking, but it's what I learned as a kid, and I catch myself going back to that and automatically at times. It's just, whatever's happening, if I just ignore it and only deal with, you know, what I absolutely have to, like, if, you know, if a bill comes overdue, then I have to do it to deal with that. But if I don't have to deal with anything else, then I don't. And I not only don't deal with it, I just put it out of my mind. It's just gone. It's out there, and it comes and impinges upon me and, you know, slaps me in the face and says, I'm here, you need to deal with me. And then I get mad. So, you know, so it's that total magical thinking that if I don't deal with it, it's going to get resolved in some way and I won't have to deal with it. You know, basically somebody else will do it.
Even though the fear of just being here, being here in this body,
and
knowing that this body can leave, and other bodies can leave, and they leave me here behind with debts to pay.
And other bodies leave, and they leave me here behind with debts to pay.
Or they leave me as a grieving mother losing my child.
They leave me as a grieving mother losing my child.
And everyone's going broke over the health bills. And
I'd rather do just nothing about it.
Living seems to be too hard.
Living seems to be very hard.
It's really hard.
Really hard.
And I get stuck.
And
I don't want to do anything about it. If I stay
within the space between life and death,
I'm safe. I'm surviving and I'm okay. And I don't have a fear of dying, but it's a fact people die. But when other people die, they leave me stuck with a lot of emotions and bills to pay, and they leave me exhausted.
And when other people die, they leave me with a lot of emotion and a lot of bills to pay and leave me stuck.
Yeah. Even though
I have a fear of being.
Of who I can be.
Of who I can be.
Because I just cannot see it. People tell me about it, but I haven't seen it. Apparently there is this beautiful place where you have no fear of death. And you can actually choose to leave anytime you want. When you're ready to go. You don't even have to be sick.
You don't even have to be sick.
You just go.
Yeah.
I like that.
I do. I like that.
Yeah. I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
And even though it seems like fear of living is a choice.
And even though it seems like fear of living is a choice.
And it seems like fear of dying is a choice.
It seems like fear of dying is a choice.
I don't know if I believe it.
I don't know if I believe that.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
Oh, eyebrows. I think they made it all up.
I didn't catch that.
I think they made it all up.
Oh, I think they made it all up.
Side of the eyes. Sounds like fantasy.
Sounds like fantasy.
Under the eyes. I believe it when I see it.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Under the nose. In the meantime, all I see is fear.
In the meantime, all I see is fear.
Under the chin, on the chin, fear of dying.
Fear of dying.
Collarbone, fear of living.
Fear of living.
Under the arms, stuck between dying and living.
Stuck between dying and living.
On the heart, this fantasy of dying consciously and healthy.
This fantasy of dying consciously and healthy.
Who made up this fantasy?
Who made up this fantasy anyway?
Oh, I have to laugh.
Yeah.
We visited my sister-in-law not long ago, and her husband has diabetes. And she kept saying, someone had told her, and I guess she liked the saying, well, our problem is that we want to die healthy.
Oh. Yeah, that would be a lot cheaper.
I know.
Oh, goodness.
I know.
That's great.
So who made, oh.
Yeah.
Ooh, that feels good.
Oh, gosh. It is. It's so funny.
It is, right? Okay, so let's see where we can take this, if we can wrap it up. I think, okay, so let's do that. Even though I'm not willing to release this fear.
Even though I'm not willing to release this fear.
The fear of dying healthy.
The fear of dying healthy.
Damn it, who made it up? You have to be sick to die.
Who made it up? You have to be sick to die.
We are so good at getting sick and dying.
We are so good at getting sick and dying.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
Even though I'm not willing to release this fear.
Even though I'm not willing to release this fear.
The fear of dying healthy.
The fear of dying healthy.
We have to get sick in order to die.
We have to get sick in order to die.
How? How stupid is that to die healthy? Who made that up?
How stupid is that to die healthy? Who in the world made that one up?
I'm not willing to let that one in.
I'm not willing to let that one in.
Yeah, such a sick fantasy to die healthy.
Just sick fantasy to die healthy.
I do think completely love and accept myself.
I completely accept and love and accept myself.
Even though I'm not willing to release this fear.
Even though I'm not willing to release this fear.
Fear of dying healthy.
Fear of dying healthy.
You have to be sick in order to die.
You have to be sick in order to die.
I choose to know now.
I choose to know now.
There's a slight possibility.
There's a slight possibility.
That you can leave anytime you want.
That you can leave anytime you want.
And even be healthy.
And even be healthy.
And actually, fear is what's causing us to be sick.
And actually, fear is what's causing us to be
but
sick.
But I'm not going to let that fear go. No way.
Let that one go.
It makes me go broke, and I just love that.
It makes me go broke, and oh, I love being broke.
It's my story.
It's my story.
I'm sticking to it.
And I'm sticking to it.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
Even though I'm not willing to release this fear.
Even though I'm not willing to release this fear.
The fear of dying healthy.
The the fear of dying healthy.
Who ever heard of that?
Who ever heard of that one?
It's just a fantasy.
Fantasy, for sure.
No, you have to be sick and go broke dying.
Well, we have to be sick and go broke dying, yes.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
I deeply and completely love and accept myself.
Eyebrows. Dying penniless.
Dying penniless.
Leaving others penniless when I die.
Penniless when it's my time.
Under the eyes. Dying takes all the resources we all have.
Dying takes all the resources we all have.
Under the nose. Dying is expensive.
Dying is expensive.
Chin. Paying money for dying.
Paying money for dying.
Collarbone. The emotional cost of dying.
Emotional cost of dying.
Under the arms. Fear of living makes us go die.
Fear of living makes us go die.
All right, but I'm not willing to let that fear go.
I'm not willing to let that fear go.
The plan is you die penniless. You have to be really, really sick.
You have to be really, really, really sick.
Ooh. That feels a lot of energy in my arms.
Yeah.
Caring for someone, right? Nurturing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we have learned to do. That's what our worth is. If we cannot do that,
yeah,
look after other people's bodies when they're dying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see. What we have is, what came up is, unless you have something that came up for you, I kind of like that. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
With the other gate that we were to focus on today is gate 9. And the gate 9 is focus. Do you have that one?
It doesn't seem familiar, but I'm checking. Nope, I don't have that one at all.
Do you have the other one on the other side, the channel? What number is that?
Was that the 46 we were looking at before, or which one?
52. It has connection to 52.
Yeah, I have the 52 unconscious, what's the one before? Let's see, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus. I have the 52 in unconscious Uranus, but I don't have the 9.
Okay, well, I have the 9.
Okay, all right.
Let me see. So that one is 256. I want to look at the whole, I was there. I don't know why. 256. I went off that page. Sorry, I'm looking here because I think that we might... not just do the 9, but learn a little bit about what the whole channel is about. So many different ways that they had. It's the logic. That makes sense. Logic. 256.
Mm-hmm.
In the logic circuit. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So the whole channel is the energy pulse to focus and concentrate, to see the big picture. And then zero in on what is important.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I just cannot figure out what to focus on and I get distracted by all the possibilities. And it's when we get ungrounded. So that's the whole channel. It has a nice seat. Maybe we'll do the seat as well. The 9, that came up recently, and it's for my husband, actually, work mm-hmm. on focus, and it's very interesting. It's sort of that gate gets us into being obsessed in a way, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
An obsession, it can get into that.
Yeah.
In the gene keys, it says in the I Ching that when it's repressed nature, one is reluctant.
Hmm.
So that feels right, rather than not do anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Reactive nature is diverted. Gift is determination, and the city in the key is invincibility. The inner space, final frontier, and I kind of like that. I just picked up a few things from it. So when the inner and outer, the small of the inner, the focus, mm-hmm. blends in, gets to function in the higher energy, it's sort of like, of course, in the bigger is the smaller as well. So once we see the big picture, we can see the details at the same time.
Yeah.
So we were, I have a little story about the focals, the nine, because my husband's really kind of was stuck in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we worked on that. That's what came up. And then we were driving one day, and I could see as we were approaching the roundabout, I could see a truck blocking that road.
Mm-hmm.
And driving, and then goes into roundabout and is about to go into the street. And I said, why are you going there? There's a truck. You can't get through. Did you not see that? He says, no, I was looking to the right side. It could be bicycles coming my way. But when I'm looking in the far, I can see what's in the corner as well. I can react to the small stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for the gate, it's the decisiveness, courage, leveraging, energy, empowerment, or the resiliency key for the focus.
Mm-hmm.
And it affects our ovaries and testes, our life force. So
yeah.
much energy goes into that.
Yeah.
Symptom, emotional symptoms, since reluctance, diverted attention, obsession. You know, the gene keys obviously helped Karen to make her program richer. I'm so focused that I cannot see the big picture.
Yeah.
So even, yeah, the focus on being rejected or whatever energy you're bringing to those interviews is
mm-hmm.
putting people off.
Yeah.
Not seeing the divine plan rather than the, you know, being the tool. Okay, where do they need me? Where can I go? Yeah. So I'm able to see the bigger perspective. The question would be, are you obsessed with your ideas and work? So, yeah, I'm wondering if you think that you are too focused on your idea work. And looking at what you had said today, just focusing on getting that job.
Yeah.
That didn't go anywhere, just focusing on that resume and the gaps, right?
Yeah.
And yet having so much to give.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's do a seed question.
Okay.
What we were doing on the courage.
Okay.
So eyebrows, what needs to be released or heal?
Needs to be released or healed.
For me to move forward.
For me to look forward.
With courage and faith.
With courage and faith.
Let's breathe that in. Courage and faith. Love that. You can use doTERRA Motivate, Passion, Clove, Fennel, or Ginger. Ginger apparently is good for courage.
Okay.
Or we have a Healing by Human Design Courage Blend, Aspen, Red Chestnut, and White Chestnut.
Mm-hmm.
And for the focus, we have a seed question. What needs to be released or healed?
What needs to be released or healed?
For me to let go of my small perspective.
For me to let go of my small perspective.
And see the big picture.
And see the big picture.
Yeah, there's just so much for you to give.
Yeah.
Feel it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so let's do the temporal tapping on this one. I have the gift of determination.
I have the gift of determination.
And focus.
Focus.
I see the things.
I see the thing.
That are important.
That are important.
And focus on them.
And focus on them.
With unwavering determination.
With bravery and determination.
With unwavering determination.
With unwavering determination. Mm-hmm.
Lovely. Let me do the 52, the opposite one, as well. Excuse me. It took a while for my throat to be clearing today, but it happens quite often. But do you have headphones working? I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
The 52, we have a choice dream seat. What needs to be released or healed?
What needs to be released or healed?
For me to focus on what needs to be focused on.
For me to focus on what needs to be focused on.
That I can do.
That I can do.
What I intend to do.
What I intend to do.
Intention is everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. In the gate for my husband, and I've shared that before, I was waiting for 7 years for him to get his license.
Yeah.
And waiting for him to go fly with him. And it wasn't happening. And I watched him go in and work very hard, not having any energy to go flying in the afternoon. And I said, what's the intention? What are you doing here? You gotta ask yourself every time you come here today, you know, I wanna have a flight, I want to have an energy for my flight. If I have to be the first one to go flying and then I'll help others.
Uh-huh.
Intention is everything.
Yeah.
And the key, we have a temporal tapping for that 52. In the stillness of my mind.
The stillness of my mind.
I find the broad perspective.
I find that the right perspective.
The broad perspective.
Broad perspective.
Yeah. A little noise in the background.
Yeah. My granddaughter's up.
Okay. All right, let's try again. In the stillness of my mind.
In the stillness of my mind.
I find the broad perspective.
I find the broad perspective.
That gives me the insight.
Gives me the insight.
Into what I need to focus on.
Into what I need to focus on.
And it's the collective circuit blend. So because it's a logic circuitry, we just try to figure it all out with the mind. And look where that gate 9 and 52 is. It's not in my head. It's under the solar plexus. Wow. How you feel now?
I feel very, very lighter, very much lighter, and actually pretty good.
It was good. I really enjoyed that.
It was a
pretty deep issue.
Yes.
Such a, you know, collective issue. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big one. And I think we did well on it today.
We did.
Well, thank you, Linda, for sharing again. Those are just wonderful stories, and we have time to just go through it and work through it, and hopefully it'll help others as well, because definitely it's helped me.
Yeah.
As much as it's working for you, it works for me.
It's good.
Everyone's issues. Everyone has them. Everyone has to face them.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So get a good rest, and I'll see you on Thursday.
Okay.
Lovely. Thank you.
All righty.
Bye, Linda.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.